Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald & Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout the D.C. metropolitan area and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, and your business. Today, we are in the arena of family law, specifically how you can plan to minimize financial hardships, surprises, and pitfalls during the divorce process. And to talk about it, we've got two terrific guests today that I'm pretty sure will help us walk through this minefield. The first is my partner, Allison McFadden, who's a family law attorney at Joseph Greenwald & Lake. Allison has been practicing law in Maryland and the District of Columbia for almost 10 years. She is senior counsel at our firm. She's based out of the Rockville office, and much of her practice is in Montgomery County, as well as Howard County, where she resides with her family. And today we've got John Faggio, a CPA, a certified financial planner, and managing member of Faggio Financial in Howard County, Maryland. His business focuses on divorce-related matters, and in his practice, John has served both as a mediator, a financial neutral in divorce cases. He has also testified, served as a forensic accountant in hundreds of divorce cases since starting his divorce financial planning practice in 2004. John, Allison, welcome. Thank you guys for joining us today. How is everyone?
Doing fine, David.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for the invitation, you and I appreciate that.
Glad you both could be here. So let's jump right in, because as those of us who do divorce work, we know that the gates open after the first of the year, and that's about where we are. We're in the first quarter of 2022. So tell me a little bit. Let's start at the top, which is, and either of you can answer. You know, there's nothing formal here. So let's start with, how do you minimize, if you're looking to get divorced, what sort of guidelines can you follow in terms of minimizing potential hardships or surprises during the divorce process?
I think the most important thing is, you know, first you need to know what you're working with, what your assets are, what different accounts you have, what your income is, what your actual after-tax income is. There's a lot of different moving parts that people might not be very familiar with. And that's something where John can help a potential client who's considering divorce start looking through their files and try to gather that information.
Well, let me follow up, John. So let's say, you know, I'm a client of Allie's, and she has said to me, you know, we got to get a handle on what your finances are. Maybe you've been in the dark. Your spouse has handled most of it for the last 20 or 30 years. Call my guy, John Faggio, and he's going to help you work your way through things. So what do you do with me? What do you talk to me about? What do you have me do? And what are you looking for?
So David, what happens in all of my cases, I will, meet with your client either virtually or rather do that in person, but virtually works okay. And what we do is I put out a list of all the important documents that I need to do to look at the whole picture. And that must, you know, that from the start, you know, with all my clients, again, it's we've got to look at the whole picture, with the starting point being the assets that you'll have, the assets that you have now, and then what assets you may have post-divorce. So it's a matter of gathering all those records. I really can't do a whole lot without having these records. And I send out a list of the information that I need to the new client, if you will. I ask them to bring as many of those documents as they can, or upload those to a Dropbox or a Google Drive, and so that I can talk to them. And I had them do that before we meet, so that I can have a really good conversation with them at the beginning.
Do you look at all at where they are in terms of potential retirement planning or what they've done for the future?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, what I do is when I gather all those documents, we have the conversation, then we start talking about, and normally, you know, when the, when, couples reach this point where they're divorcing, you know, a lot of their dreams, and you've seen this, both of you have seen this, or that, are kind of shot, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got to, you know, kind of start. And the most important thing is what I believe I do best for clients and help the attorneys out is to try to focus them on the future. Zig Ziglar said how you see the future is much more important than what happened in your past, right? And
sure.
We've had cases, I mean, Allie and I've cases, I've had them along with Darren, where you know, your client will keep on going back in the past and they talk about entitlements. And so what we do is we start focusing them on, okay, what's important? Where are you going to live? Okay. Where do you need to live in the next 2 years? What about your 3 years? Where are your kids in education? Okay. Will they be leaving the nest soon? And that leads us into, okay, well then, you know, do you need that much of a house? Okay. Are you working now? You know, are you not working? Maybe you've been a stay at home. Well, then what kind of retirement plans do you have? Let's look at those and let's see what you're going to have post-divorce, maybe assuming a 50-50 split.
So I'm an emotional person, right? Not me personally, but this hypothetical me.
Right.
It's an emotional person. And so, and I'm going to ask you both this question. You asked me what I need. I need what I have. I mean, I got this house. I got my nice car. I get to go on my vacations. My kids are, you know, at Michigan and Stanford or wherever they are. And those schools cost $70,000 or $80,000 a year each. That's what I need. I need my credit card. I need to be able to do, you know, what I'm going to do. So what else do you need from me? I'm telling you what I need. What do you guys do to try to get me on the path toward reality, so to speak, assuming you have to?
That's the first question. I mean, so we need to know what you have that you're working with. What can you still afford? Where are the different income streams and how much are you likely to be left with? And from the attorney's perspective, part of the conversation is about what you're likely to get if you go to the court. What does the law entitle you to? Not what you feel entitled to, but what the law entitles you to. And then kind of working back from there as to what you're likely to get in court and what it's going to take you to get there. I think that's one of the big trade-offs that people need to think about. How much are you going to spend in time and emotional expense, really, to get to that final point? And then they have to make the hard decision about whether those things that they, quote unquote, need are truly needs and what are you giving up to try to get those things. So it is difficult to kind of reimagine all of that. But, you know, when you're going through a divorce, a lot of this is you're going to be starting, in a sense, a new life on the other side. And so you don't need to bring everything from your old life forward necessarily.
Okay, but, you know, I kind of like, I hate to keep pressing, but I kind of, you know, aside from my spouse, who I can't wait to for him or her to go, I kind of like my life. And so after Allie, you've sort of had this strategic kind of discussion with them. Then John, tell me about your part in terms of trying to lay out and I want to step away from the expert witness side for a second from that side in terms of planning. You know, I mean, so now you know what we have, whatever that may be. You have a sense of our expenses going forward, what might be discretionary, what might be what we need. How do you look at that in its entirety organically and try to package it up for the client so that they can sit down and try to make a plan with you?
Sure. And Allie touched upon this and you did too, Dave. Certainly, you know, the emotions, you know, cloud judgment, right?
Sure.
You know, that can lead to bad decision making, and then that has a negative impact on your financial security. So just I'm going to relate in this podcast, I'm going to talk about to some of my past clients and how I help them in this emotional stage. And what happens is I had a woman very shortly, I had a woman come in and she said, well, I want $5,000 a month. You know, how's that sound to you, John? And I was like, oh, gee, I don't know. I haven't taken a look at that thing. So when I ran, and what we do to answer your question, David, is to run projections, okay, cash flow projections for both sides. We look at the budget, the monthly budget for each spouse. So this way we can come up with what is the ability to pay and what does the other spouse really need. Okay. And when I did this in that case, what happened was when I put $5,000 of alimony in there and we ran after-tax income, as Allie talked about, and then all the expenses. And what happened was running those side by side, husband had a big negative. And
when you say a big negative, you mean that with
couldn't afford it.
Couldn't afford to pay what your client thought she needed.
Right, what she wanted.
Okay.
And so we had a discussion after. So I sent the projections out to her, which is income, less taxes, plus or minus child support or alimony, and then less your expenses, right? That comes to your monthly bottom line. And when she, I sent those out to her, and I'll never forget, she came in the office. She goes, well, I guess I was shooting a little too high. And, you know, and I said, that's
don't
right.
We all? We all like right. to shoot a little
so,
too high.
You know, so it's like a difference between, so I bring rationale in, I work with numbers. Okay. So we have emotions and we have numbers. Okay. This is the way it looks. We run scenarios. This, to answer your question again, we run settlement scenarios. If you get this much alimony, if you get this much child support, you have these expenses, this is what you're, what this is what it looks like during the year and after the year, okay? And then how that affects then going out their financial standing, their financial net worth going forward. So it's very helpful to the attorney and to the client.
All right. So you also, I suppose you also take into account, and Allison, this is a place that I'm sure that you evaluate as well, is whether they're, you know, is a client able to work? Can he or she work? And what can they expect to earn? Right? Because that may affect your strategy, Allison, in the divorce. And John, that also could give you another way of looking at these numbers, right?
Absolutely. So the question of whether or not a spouse can make more income when you have a situation where someone's been out of work, or maybe they've been not employed at full capacity because they're taking care of other family responsibilities. And the question of then, what do we put this person's income at affects both child support and alimony. And in terms of the alimony piece, I think what you're most likely to see from the Maryland court is that unless somebody is of an age or has a medical condition where they're unable to work, the trend is that the court would like for individuals to become self-supporting and get the education, get the training, do what they need to do to be able to re-enter the workforce. And I think that people also, you know, if they've been out of the workforce for a while, this is something that can be really intimidating. But when you look at even getting a small income and having that income grow going forward, and this is something where John can show you the projection of how that's going to give you just that little bit more each year, will allow you to do maybe some of those things that you thought you wouldn't be able to do after the divorce, if you're able to find employment.
All right. So John, now I've spent time with Allie. She's told me what I can expect. Not very happy about it, but intellectually I understand it. And so, you know, I'm a lawyer, right? But I haven't practiced for the last 10 or 12 years. I've done it because of what Allie's told me. I realize I'm going to have to get back to work. My kids are grown so I can go full time. I've looked into what I need to do. And I think, you know, if I do some training, if I do some additional classes and so forth, that I should be able to get a job for say $75,000 or $80,000 a year. Whereas today I'm not earning anything and it might take me a year or so to get there. Take that scenario and tell me, how do you work with that in terms of talking to this client about planning for the future, what he or she can afford to do now and how things may look, how that extra income might change that picture that you just talked about a few minutes ago?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. And, you know, I think almost every case we're running into this, especially in the gray divorces that a lot of us are doing now, right? Where they've been married 30, 40 years and one spouse hasn't worked for maybe that long, right? But, you know, so right away I'll ask, you know, what their background is and how long it's been since they've worked, et cetera. And then I really take if you can get a job, let's say, what is the minimum that you'll be able to make? Okay. And then we build on top of that. You know, we also look, and again, this is, you know, I hate to say holistic because people have different, they have different meanings for that, if you will, but or definitions of that. But, you know, I look at the whole picture again. So, okay, are there assets that we can use, okay, that can get the spouse who needs to be trained, if we get the money out and be able to use that towards her towards his or her training. So that's important. Again, looking at all that, and that goes into too, and we're looking at the, you know, and I said holistic, we're looking at the whole picture, right? We're looking at, you know, even retirement funds. Many people, I'm sure Allie and both of you have seen that, a lot of people have all their assets tied up in retirement plans, right? Which are, and if they're under age 59 and a half, there's a real problem. So we start talking about, in many cases, we start talking about, okay, what can we do to get the spouse that needs support, what can we do to get them self-supporting, okay, as soon as possible? And again, running those projections. And we also talk about, so, you know, drilling down, we'll talk about, okay, the house. What do you need? You know, is it better that you just rent right now and buy, you know, and purchase later? Is it better that you, if you can you stay in the house for a period of time? I'll talk to you, to Allie, about that. You know, we'll, what do you think we'll get? I like use and possession, especially when there are younger kids, because it gives the occupant at that time, they can understand how much the expenses are.
And just so we're clear, because there's going to be some people out there listening who don't know what that is. Use and possession is a period of time that a separated spouse can live in his or her home with his or her children for a period of time until there has to be some decision made either by the parties or by the court as to what's going to happen with the house, right? So that's something that you think can be helpful to potentially your client so that he or she can get a feel for what it's like to run that household without the other spouse.
Absolutely, David. And, okay, you know, we're talking about many cases where the spouse who wants to stay in the house talks to me just about the mortgage, right? And then that's something that when we're planning out, it's like, well, okay, can you refinance the home? Are you going to be able to do that? Let's talk to a mortgage broker, right? But we talk about more than just the mortgage payment because we've got other carrying costs that, and sweat equity, if you will, that it takes to, you know, if you have a spouse that's living in a 4-bedroom house and children are going to college next year and he or she wants to stay in the house, it's like, well, wait a minute, let's talk about, oh, when you're going to be working, let's talk about how, you know, your soon-to-be ex-spouse used to do everything in the house and now they're not going to be doing everything. Right. So let's talk about your time. So we really get into that life stage planning.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a big difference, obviously, you know, if we're two people, I tell people the same thing, I'm sure Allie, you do also, right? It's a big difference when one person is running a household versus two. And that cuts into your ability, right, to do some of the things that John is talking about in terms of furthering your career.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people underestimate what it takes to run the house. And it's like John said, it's not just the mortgage. And even financially, you're looking at the expenses of repairs, maintenance, upkeep. You know, if one person used to cut the grass, do the landscaping, that's might be a cost you're adding. And just the general upkeep of the house is a lot. And it's the kind of decision that people have to make about, you know, do they really want to really drag something from the past into the future because it makes them feel secure? Or are they willing to look at the numbers and to make a kind of a leap to what could be a great decision? And I think John helps them get there over that block by really showing the projections and the numbers. And this is kind of the figures that you're looking at, because that's not something that most people are really able to conceptualize. And I think that's one of the biggest things that holds people back, is just the fear of not really understanding or knowing what's going to happen, and not being able to have that picture in their head can be difficult. So
Sure. I mean, as you know, having been married to a mental health professional for 35 years, you know, I'm well aware of the fact that change and the unknown produce anxiety. And I, and both of you, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but both of you deal with a fair amount of that anxiety in your business practices.
Absolutely. Yeah. People have, you know, it's the anxiety of what's going to happen tomorrow. What's sure. it going to look like tomorrow? What's going to happen if I go to court? What's going to happen? You know, after the judge hears my case. And that's another going to the anxiety, being able, if you can, to reach an agreement with your spouse and to resolve some of these issues is a great way to try to take away some of that anxiety and also to lower the costs.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk to you next, right? Right. So let's shift to that for a second. So I've now spent time with you, Allison. I've spent time with John, and I'm convinced that I need to do something or I'm going to end up, you know, working on a farm in Iowa someplace and at $10 or $12 an hour. So I understand I got to make changes, but I also understand I got two people that I'm paying that aren't going to be on my payroll to get me through this. What can I do to help myself in terms of minimizing costs if I have to go through the either part or all of this sort of divorce process, we'll call it, involving litigation or mediation or whatever the case may be? What can I do to try to keep those bills down?
Being an active participant in your case and being on top of what is going on. If there are requests made for documents, information, gathering that information, getting it to, you know, whoever's requesting it in an organized and timely manner will really reduce a lot of costs and frustration because the information will be there. It'll be accurate. It'll be available to the professionals who need it. We won't have to be chasing you down. And it just leads to a lot smoother ability to kind of reach these final projections that John is talking about. That organization done by the clients in terms of documents and information.
Don't bring your grocery bag full of bills, in other words. Yeah, crumpled right. up with dogs having chewed them. And John, from your perspective, you know, what do you tell your client? If we want to try to keep your fees down, here's some ideas for you.
Well, piggybacking what Allie just said, gathering all those documents, and that, you know, again, I have a list of documents, specific documents that I need, and does not include the shoebox or bag or the bills, etc. Also, what this does is when I ask them, and I'll ask them, well, you know, do you have to give me the any forms, like court prepared forms, that such as long term financial statement? You know, we want them to create a budget, okay? And so, you know, and then all the information that Allie just talked about, they should, which really, really great, I found, especially this starting last year, I guess, was, you know, using Google Documents, using OneDrive, Dropbox. I ask my clients, listen, would you like to set up, I'll set up a Dropbox for you, and you can load up all those files, and then I'll give the attorney and the client access to that along with me. So then we're all on the same page. We're loading up the documents. We're looking at the same documents. That's really important. I think the other thing is to understand what each professional is, what their role is. So, and I know David, we've been involved in collaborative cases a long time ago. And we learned the real true value of having a mental health professional involved.
Sure.
You know, because, you know, and the attorneys, I work with attorneys throughout the state. And it's like, well, you know, they have you on the phone for 10, 15, 20 minutes, half hour, and they're yelling about their spouse, right? And it's like, we use all of us, we're experts in, you know,
right.
and that's real important. And know and understand how we all charge, you know, whether it's by 3 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, understand that. But again, being organized, I think, Allie, one of the things you said is being involved. You know, we used to say in collaborative cases, when the team is doing all the work, right? and then they're not, we know we're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
You know, I've had discussions with my clients about, well, you know, they want me to do this. And they, you know, do certain things. I'm like, well, I understand that. It's going to cost you more time, and you're not really learning anything. You've got to take control now, you know, and this goes back to even when you have clients that have been in debt for years and they're just terrible at it. Well, this is one of the things I talk to them about. Okay, you're off to a new life. Let's talk about, you know, not using charge cards or using one charge card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also has to do with how their settlement negotiations go. You know, David and yep. Ellie, that clients, when they tend to talk, they bring up the history in mediations or, you know, even in court. It just really increased the cost dramatically.
So organization, right, is important to both of you. If a client is organized, can get your documents or get your information easily and as opposed to in 67 different emails, one or 67 different scans of documents upside down that they take pictures of documents on their phones. Avoid that kind of thing. Send it all together. Try to be consolidated. Tell you guys what it is I'm sending to you so that you know. And then everybody, if I'm not technically savvy, I got to rely on my kid or somebody to help me, or I should, to make sure I know how to use Dropbox or use one of those electronic gathering sort of places so that both of you have access to things, right? Without me sending you a bunch of stuff and sending you 19 other emails asking if you got it. Right.
Okay. Right. Most professionals are going to charge you by their time, by their hours. So those emails really add up, and trying to consolidate those kinds of things makes a big difference in your bill in the end.
Let's tie this up with now you know, I've gone to Allison. Allison's working with me. Allison has sent me to John. John has put me on some ideas in terms of financial path and a plan. And we're moving through this litigation. We're looking to try to settle the case. And again, we're talking hypothetically. We haven't given you any specifics. Give these folks that are listening out there some sort of markers or guideposts in terms of what you're looking for and how you might advise them. And again, we all know it may be different in different circumstances, but just some general rules of the road. John, let's start with you.
David, I guess comment I'm making in many cases and direction, I always talk about buying a new garden hose. The genesis of that came when I talked to an experienced attorney years ago when I first started. And he talked about a case where they were settling everything and they were wrapping things up, and all at once it really came down to the garden hose. Where in this case, the wife really wanted this for some reason.
It's one of those ones that don't get all tangled.
Right. It was very special.
Yeah.
It might have been inherited.
It was a nice collar or
whatever. Anyway, it blew it up. It blew up. Everything, you know, they couldn't settle. It was ridiculous. And so I always say, don't hold on to the garden hose. So if we're talking about alimony and, you know, we wanted $5,000 a month and you're settling on, you know, we're at $4,300 or $4,500 or $4,800, whatever it is. And you as the attorney say, listen, that's the best. Well, then, you know, don't have you go to trial or have a mediation, et cetera, just for that last couple $100.
Right.
And if they've done the homework with me, they'll know what difference that'll make.
The economics of spending $15,000 or $20,000 to fight over that difference of $300 or $400 or $500 a month.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Over the long term.
So this is where you can help someone. I mean, it's clear as day that you can help someone who says, I need X, Y, or Z, but he's only putting A on the table. And then you can jump in and say, okay, well, let's look at the real difference here. And versus you spending money to see whether Allie can ring the bell and get you closer to what you think you want.
Right? Exactly, Dave. It's like, and again, bringing reasoning in. And again, we're talking about needs versus so-called entitlements. It's like, okay, you know, you're looking for 5,000, we're using that example, but remember those tax projections that I ran for you?
Yeah.
You really only need, you know, 4,500, you're going to be okay. And we can adjust adjust your expenses, or maybe you can make a little more money, you know, by doing it this way. So to close down that, you know, that mediation or the trial, you know, just get it done. And I know both you and Allie working with you, and then Darren in your, you know, in your firm, that we're always looking for that. Let's not bring this to court. You know, let's talk. Yeah. Let's be reasonable.
Yeah. Okay. And you, Allie?
At a mediation, you know, you're also able to do things in a more creative way. So having a financial advisor and your attorney there to advise you as to, okay, you say you know, the house is your, going back to the house, your house is your number one priority. This is what it's really going to cost you. And there's only so many things, you know, pieces of property to be split. So if you're taking the house, what does that mean you have to give up to get it? And what does that really look like? Are you giving up income producing assets or these investment accounts that you are giving to the other side to get this house, which may or may not depreciate? You have to kind of look at what the true value of the different assets are, both financially and also what they're really worth to you and what you're going to have to give up to get them and whether it's worth it to you. I think that's kind of at the end of the day, once you have all the information in front of you, it's really up to the client. We can give you all of this information and tell you kind of different outcomes, projections, but it's up to the client to put the real value or worth on a settlement or what they're asking for.
Gotcha. Well, there's certainly clear benefit, it seems to me, and anybody listening out there, to having someone like Allie and someone like John on your team as you navigate a divorce process, which as we know, the three of us know, is filled with the potential for unintended consequences, questions that arise that you weren't ready for. But having both of you, I think clearly would be helpful to someone, particularly who's not all that sophisticated when it comes to finances and what plans financially in terms of reasonableness might be down the road. So I want to thank you both for joining us today. And John, if anyone listening wants to get hold of you directly, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Two ways. My phone number, my direct line is 410-988-7333. Or most of the days at my computer, and I get those notifications that, in fact, one popped up after our session today. But john@divorce-finances.com. Those Excellent. Are the best ways. And John, I will prepare to make my appointment, so you'll be good to go.
Great. john@divorce-finances.com. Got it.
Gotcha.
And Allison, if anyone wants to talk to you, is thinking about getting divorced, planning divorce, or is even separated, what's the best way for them to reach you?
So you can call the firm. My direct number is 240-399-7891. You can also go on the JGL website, www.jgllaw.com, and check out my bio, see some of the blog posts and different things that we've written.
Excellent. I want to thank you both again for joining us. Everyone out there, thanks for listening. We look forward to having you join us again on our next episode. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.